September 17, 2010, the Norris Group hosted its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate 2010. The Norris Group assembled an incredible lineup of industry experts to discuss the state of REO from the inside. Topics included regulatory intervention and aftermath, bulk buying myths and facts, and the opportunities emerging for eager real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds went to the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for The Cure. This event would not be possible without generous help from the following platinum partners: The Business Press, Foreclosure Radar, and Sean O'Toole, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops, and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration, and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Claudia Buys Houses, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for iSurvive2010.com, MVT Productions, who always provide our audiovisual needs, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvive2010.com for more details and to watch the event video.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Investors are actually buying about a third of our property.
Okay. So I mean, that's not insignificant. Obviously, there's a margin there, and it doesn't always have to be part of a bulk to make sense to either keep as a rental. Is there any financing on some of the purchases?
Not from us.
Not from you.
The other whale.
Okay. Now that's interesting.
Yeah, we have HomePath. Many property, our website for listing properties and selling them via the retail execution is called homepath.com.
Okay.
And a lot of them will qualify for our HomePath financing. And then we have another product. It's a HomePath financing for the properties that need to be rehabbed. So we do offer financing.
Now, when you say that last one, does that somehow include the repair?
Yeah.
Cost?
Yeah.
Okay. Sort of like a 203K FHA loan?
There's some differences,
okay.
But yeah, some similarities.
All right. Any quantity restrictions there as far as how many loans we might be able to get? Don't know? Okay.
I don't know.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we're used to hearing the number four a lot. which for this group doesn't do much good. But
how about if we go to six?
That'll be a 50% improvement, yeah. But you know what? We'll take what we can get.
We're working on it.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. No, but you're right, though, that the individual investor who, you know, spots a property that's, you know, in the center of their zone and that they have a great idea with what to do with is making the best offers. And those are the ones that are selling to the investor. It's hard to pull a pool of assets together to get that same attraction that one investor who's got a great idea with a property and knows what to do with it could yield.
And I overheard you speaking with Tommy Williams, and you're saying you're expanding a little bit some of the people that'll be joining your team, let's say. So is that because you feel like there's going to be more inventory?
Well, as the inventory levels are up, you know, we started the year with about 45,000 properties in inventory, and today we have about 70,000. Now, 70,000 in all phases, 55% of those are in the redemption, eviction, pre-list phase.
Is that taking longer now, too, by the way?
It's taking longer, and about 55% of our properties are coming occupied.
Yeah.
So it takes longer to get people out. We have, you know, probably about 15,000 homes on the market, but then the rest are in the closing process. So as the inventory levels go up, you know, and as the first tier, the first 90-day strategies are executed, when those don't work, then we might move to a ballroom or online auction, or it may still be an opportunity to extend the listing or relist if that property maybe has had multiple sale fall-throughs or still is in a great retail spot or could stand to use some renovation and repair and maybe get a better recovery rate that way. Our goal is to try to figure out at any moment what will get the best recovery for that property.
Okay.
And we'll take it down the waterfall that way.
And what usually is the time frame for you to eventually end up with, let's say, even to the auction stage? Is that 3 or 4 months?
It varies by market, so faster markets would be earlier than 90 days, perhaps. Slower markets might be a little bit longer. But we typically enter into a 90-day listing agreement with our brokers, ask them for a 90-day strategy, so we like to give them the 90 days to execute that strategy. We issue a last call on day 75, typically, because the last thing I want is the broker, after all that time and effort was put in, to come to me and say, gosh, if I had known you were going to sell it at that price, I could have sold it for you. So to avoid that, we give them kind of a two-week last call to say, this is so that we don't have that conversation. Last opportunity, please sell it, and then we move on to Tier 2.
And what percentage is that?
The Tier 2, you know.
I'm only kidding. I'm talking about the discount. I'm just trying to get it. Okay. You know.
We got a list price on it.
Okay, we'll just give it a shot and see what happens. Okay. How do you qualify for the bulk purchases? Is there processes that are online?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a web-based portal now, and so a prospective investor would have to fill out a form, basically, to provide a lot of information about themselves and provide their tax ID number, and we do background checks. We're obligated to do checks on every prospective investor. And then if the investor clears the vetting process, then they are given access to this web-based portal so that when new lists of properties come out, they can access the properties, and then they can also access our form of pool sale contract. So they know what the deal is, and they know where the properties are, and they're free to submit a bid.
They're typically listed already with a broker?
Yes.
Okay. And the quantity can be vary?
Again, these would be the bigger pools.
Oh, the bigger pools. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So everything we do with public entities is negotiated.
Okay.
So that doesn't go through the same bid process.
You know,
and lists aren't published in this web-based portal. It's a very everything about it is negotiated.
Okay. Well, you know, we have certainly some people in this room that might be interested in those bigger deals. What would be the journey of, okay, they get to the website, there's the list. How long do they get due diligence time period, and how are they in California specifically, or they're everywhere?
They're everywhere.
Okay.
So you get a little California, a little Detroit, you're going to be all over the country.
So you're treating us the same way he does. You're just loading that truck up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know,
some lovely properties in Detroit. You know, the brick work is excellent. Not a lot in doors and things, but the brick is excellent.
So, the one thing
maybe
that
short on appliances too.
They're short on. Yeah. You could
is electricity important to you?
Oh. Most of us will even deal with that if the price is right, but not there. Not
how about plumbing?
Plumbing? Yeah, we do that too. You know, there is something that I'll mention, and I know that you guys are not in the policy-making decision, but sometimes you have the ear of people, is that by observation, and we are interested in saving taxpayers' money, probably handing it to investors to participate in the solution is a far cheaper solution than go into the NSB in the cities, because it's a very different process and much more expensive. So I don't know if there's ever any good word that can be put in for investors, but when we watch the numbers that emerge, there's just no doubt that they could partner with investors and save an awful lot of taxpayer money. So I don't know how we cross over to that.
Well, here's a plug for Tommy Williams. Well, I mean, they should go to the auctions. They can buy a lot of properties in a specific geographic area by auction. They do it every day. We do it every day. Tommy does a great job. So,
Yes, he does.
And I would tell you that even though that's where we go first with the NSP, buyer, I think that's because of our mission, our government conservatorship and such. It's still not a high volume of properties,
Which is interesting, because you think it certainly could be with the amount of money you're talking about, but it isn't.
No, it's not.
Yeah, for us in the prior 12 months, we sold about 30,000 properties to owner-occupants during that first look period, and then about 5,000 properties to people using NSP funds.
Okay.
So it's about 5,000 properties for us in the last 12 months.
So less than 20%.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we bring up the rest of the gang, and we will cause some more
promotion?
Are they going to play nice? I'm sure they're going to play nice. Now, you got to remember that these folks are not policy makers here. Okay. Boy, I worked feverishly on this list. You know, you just, even radio shows, one thing, I always am very well prepared. I probably have twice as many questions as I ever need. And invariably, I listen to the answers, and it goes off to other tangents. And that's certainly what happened now. I found it very interesting. And Tommy, I need to find the notes that I had for you, because I just want to start. You had me read The World is Flat, the book that he does not like. It's okay.
I excuse him. He cannot help it. He'll get over it.
Well, there's some quotes that I'll just do one of them right now. No institution will go through fundamental changes unless it believes it is in deep trouble and needs to do something different to survive. And I really think that that's one of the core issues that I think you wanted me to read that book for.
Absolutely. I think that, and I've already mentioned that earlier. I think in America, and needless to say, you folks have heard me for a couple of 3 years by now, nobody believes in the free enterprise system and the opportunity that America affords. There isn't any place in the world that affords this opportunity. But it has been built upon the initiative of the individual. And the key thing we have to focus on is constantly turning that individual loose. And that's where I think the problem is. And I'm not wanting to hammer the government or anybody else, but anytime you put things in the way of that individual being able to buy the product, whatever the product is, for its fair market value at a given point in time, then there's going to be a repercussion eventually that is going to be far worse, in my opinion, than dealing with the value today. I think that naturally, I believe in the auction process. The stock market, and you've heard me say this before, the stock market is an auction. And everybody agrees with that auction each and every day. Now, there are many factors that make that auction work, but what if tomorrow morning the Dow Jones says, you know what? If Microsoft does not bring $25, we won't sell it. Wouldn't work. It won't work. And see, that's what's happened with us in this housing situation. 3 years ago, the market told us that we had to rethink what houses were worth. And unfortunately, we have found out how accurate the market was. And that's why I agree with Sean. I think Sean is dead on. I only wish that he was not as accurate as I'm afraid he is. Because I think that we have a long road ahead of us before we reach what I call the real value that the average homeowner can afford to pay for a home in America. And there's going to be a lot of pain between here and there, but the quicker we let that happen. Now, I think that Sarah has this program where a particular city could buy homes, and maybe we've talked about that, maybe actually bulldoze 2,000 of them, because they're a detriment to the entire community. Not wanting to be hard on New Orleans, but if anybody has visited New Orleans, I can assure you, you could go down there and tomorrow morning we would all agree you could get rid of 10,000 homes and it would be the best thing that ever happened for that city. But nobody wants to tell it quite that straight.
Well, they just did.
Yeah, well, that's who I am.
One more quote from the book, and I enjoyed the book. I haven't read it all yet, but I read for 3 hours today, that book. And this stuck out to me. Unfortunately, it's been too long since America had a leader ready and willing to call on our nation to do something hard, to give something up, not to get something more, and to sacrifice for a great national cause in the future rather than live for today.
Of course, I could not believe more in that philosophy. And I think any politician that would actually have the courage to stand up and tell America what is true, and I mean stand by now, don't ever give it lip service, but to say to America, this is what we must do. I think you would be flabbergasted how America would get behind that person and elect them instantly. But we've had so much BS, we're not used to it.
when I opened the questions and asked you the first question, that was, you know, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. You know, we've had two in the last decade, 9/11 and this financial crisis. And I remember being in a baseball game where 50,000 people stood up and sang the national anthem. And I've been to baseball games way before that, and if two people stood up, they were shy. And one time, 50,000 people and a fighter jet went over, and you know, that was a touching moment. I think that's the type of thing that when you have a crisis, you can make some changes and get some support. But yeah, we really have to have somebody that we believe at the top, that's for sure. Christopher, you had mentioned, and this is a connection with that quote that I just read, you seem more concerned about our debt levels than our fiscal. Would that be accurate? Our debt levels as far as, well, let's talk about...
I'm worried where our fiscal debt is going. Where it is right now is fine, but the trajectory we are on is terrifying. Okay. I mean, we're borrowing $1.3 trillion this current fiscal year. You know, we really don't have a lot of debt because much of the debt is sitting in Social Security, and so net debt is maybe 60%, 40%, 55% of the economy right now, which I know sounds high, but it's really not that high. It's certainly not large from a industrial country perspective. But if you're borrowing $1.3 trillion a year, that's going to turn from, you know, 55, 60% to 90% to 95 to 110% in the very near future. And since we are a nation, unlike Japan, we are a nation that relies on external capital, there's going to come a point in time where the world bond market is going to say enough is enough, and then it's going to be very, very difficult.
That's just at the federal level. I mean, what about households, cities, counties?
No, they're not that bad. The day is there. And first of all, don't forget, most states and counties are limited in their ability to hold debt. They don't have, I mean, even our, we have a deficit, but we don't have a state debt problem outside the pensions, which is...
I
can already see it already. We survived the pensions crisis 2025 cancer charity event, all right? So that'll be the next round, but that's not what we're talking about today. And consumer debt really, you know, went up. It spiked up largely along with asset values. In fact, you look at the level of American debt, it stayed proportionate to asset values in the midst of this massive asset bubble.
About 10.
And the problem is when the asset bubble, went away and asset prices started back to normal levels, suddenly Americans realized they had too much debt. And by the way, the vast majority of that is mortgage debt. Non-mortgage debt didn't rise at all relative to GDP through this crisis. It had been in the same trajectory. It's mostly mortgage debt. And oh, by the way, it's mostly Fannie and Freddie mortgage debt, along with some asset-backed securities. And so, but overall, that hole is not as large as you might think it is. It really
is. It's GDP manufactured through finance, insurance, and real estate, right? So is it real GDP? It's not like we're manufacturing.
Oh, I don't want to get into debate with you on how you measure GDP. That's completely irrelevant. Let's just say it's believable enough.
Well, but let's talk about the future growth then, because the 90s were, that GDP growth came from a lot of stock investments, yes?
No. Stock investments have nothing to do with GDP. Don't confuse the real world with the financial world.
Okay.
Right? The real world is...
When we spend stock profits, is that part of GDP?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Okay. No, that's...
Separate issues.
Okay.
In fact, that's one of the goofy things about it, because what they have to do is you pay taxes. Let's say you make capital gains in your stock market portfolio. You will pay taxes on that, and it will be recorded in the GDP statistics as taxes paid, but they have to subtract out your capital gains income from the personal income account.
Okay.
Because that's not included in there. So it comes as a goofy game. That's just why taxes are so hyper-cyclical. A lot of it is the fact that there are non-recorded income in our personal income statement.
You said there's some point you are worried about our fiscal debt.
Worried about it now.
You're worried about it now. Okay.
Yeah, because of where we're going with it.
What percentage do you finally get concerned? I mean, is it 100% of...
You know what? That is an unanswerable question.
Okay.
Because we've never been there before.
We haven't, but...
We've never been there before. And we've never had a government that on both sides of the aisle seems absolutely so unbelievably unwilling to acknowledge the reality of the situation. Neither side. I mean, we can't raise taxes, but you have to close the deficit. It doesn't work that way. This is what the scary thing is. I am a proponent of raising taxes.
A proponent?
I am.
Okay.
And I think that the entire Bush tax cut should be rolled out over the next 2 years. Not because I like paying taxes, But because if you finally make the American public pay what those guys are spending, then we will finally stop them from spending it. And that's the problem. We have developed this shocking ability to pretend that somehow the federal debt's not our debt. It is our debt. If they're borrowing $1.3 trillion, a lot of that's yours, folks. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's $4,000, $4,500 a person. And, oh, by the way, the vast majority of Americans are not going to be paying that.
Right. Everybody's got to pay taxes for it to make a dent, for them to come to the realization that it's a problem.
That's a problem. Exactly. So the entire taxing...
You have more faith than I do, they won't spend it.
What's that?
You have more faith than I do, they won't spend it.
Well, at least
taxes.
At that point in time, people will be forced to acknowledge the reality of the situation. Because right now, we live in this never-never land where somehow or other it's not a problem.
Do you feel that deleveraging is deflationary?
No.
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 Okay.
Because leveraging is not inflationary.
Okay.
We went through a huge period of leveraging, and I didn't see any sign of inflation anywhere across. In the middle of that leveraging binge, Alan Greenspan was worried about deflation. So why in God's green earth would everybody think that deleveraging is going to lead to deflation?
Okay. Well, that's why I'm asking. When you pay things off instead of spend, that's not affecting it?
You can reduce demand somewhat, and that can reduce what we call the velocity of money, which can have some deflationary pressures, which is exactly why Bernanke went through quantitative easing to pump money in the system to offset that, by which he did a pretty good job.
Okay. All right. I have to
still
read
don't
it.
Believe me.
I've got to read that book. No, it's okay. No, it's just a tough subject, and that's one of the things, you know, I don't have a background in some things to where concepts, they're not second nature. And that's the thing. You read a lot, but there's some things that are just missing. You really have to try to get them. Joseph, I wanted to ask you something because it occurred to me in the real estate bubble about the definition of market value. And the definition of market value, if you have a willing buyer and seller who come to a meeting of the minds, then you have a comp. And it occurred to me that definition will never be able to stop a real estate bubble. Because we built homes in, let's say, Rosamond. And in Rosamond, the market should have been probably 150 grand, and we were selling for 280, and people were camping out. And the evidence was there that was worth 280 because we had 10 people want one. And the reason I bring it up, in the commercial world, the appraisal has multiple pieces. And it's on the residential form. You have comps, you have cost of building, and you have
income
generated. But in the residential world, thus far, it doesn't apply. I guess I'm just wondering, do you see any pressure to change the basic structure of how you come to a value?
Well, I think that definition needs to be looked at because if we look at what happened with pricing, especially here in California, the prices escalated so fast, they showed us on the chart, yet the rentals they were able to get residentially didn't change that much. And so I think what happened is I think the prices changed a lot, but the underlying value didn't go up that much. And we're coming back down to that level. And unfortunately, the government created too much artificial demand in the housing market, and that helped cause this bubble, that taking people basically really couldn't afford to have a home and coming up with programs to put people in housing.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2010. 1M1 Properties, Adrenaline Athletic, Awesome Limousines, Benton Investment Group, Colonial Gardens Mobile Home Community, Community Reinvest Group, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, Entrust California, Everlast Photography, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Keystone CPA, Landwood Title, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Financial Services, Mike Cantu, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Summit Solutions, Tony Alvarez, TheREOMentor.com, WealthPoint, Westin South Coast Plaza. To find out more about I Survived Real Estate 2010, visit isurvived2010.com.